Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
Nothing much, Nick. Started my birthday week last night after work. Feeling really good. A lot of good basketball on last night. The Pacers kicked the crap out of the terrible Atlanta Hawks. Darren Collison was back, which made me really happy.
Yeah, there was a lot of great basketball last night. The Blazers extended their winning streak to 9 against the Warriors, something we didn't really expect. Pelicans' winning streak ended last night. And then also Houston-Toronto was a great game. And that's what we're going to start with. But before we talk about that, just a quick reminder, you can listen to the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play. And now we will be airing on Dash Radio. But let's get started with Houston and Toronto. This was a great game, down to the wire. You know, Toronto started off big in this one, had a nice lead. The Rockets got back in it, close game to the end. You know, Toronto just came up with the clutch possessions at the end and won the game, 108-105 in the sixth, and Drake was there.
Yeah, the Drake commentary that went down in the third quarter was entertaining. I don't know if you heard – I don't know what broadcast you were listening to, but I was listening to the Raptors. And he had – some kind of drink or whatever. And they were like, what are you drinking? He was like, oh, orange juice. You know, it's for the calcium. And it's obviously it wasn't, but it was comical. Drake's always good. And I love those OVO uniforms. Those are really sharp.
I mean, the whole court, when they do that style, look pretty nice. Yeah, and the fans always get a cool t-shirt every night. It's Drake night or any type of OVO thing.
Yeah, it fires. I feel like it fires up the team more, too. I don't know. He's definitely... Sure. He's the Spike Lee of Toronto, and I'm completely okay with it.
Yeah, no, I think he's probably bigger than Spike Lee in Toronto. He's like the man of Canada. Like, they love him, and also, obviously, just everything he does, like the God's plan thing, positive impact. But back to basketball, the game was great. You know, this is low-key a potential finals matchup. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but it's a real possibility. It's not, you know, the highest likely thing to happen, but we could see it. And the Raptors came to play last night. First quarter, 32-16. Kyle Lowry lit it up. 13 points, 3 threes, 3 assists, all in the first quarter. Started with that big lead. What did you think about the Raptors to start the game?
Well, Kyle Lowry this season hasn't really been that offensively aggressive. You know, a lot of the games, it was a couple nights ago, I believe against Detroit, Kyle Lowry only had like one shot taken at halftime. There's just certain games where he's just not as involved or aggressive in the offense. But against a team like the Rockets, you have to have everyone contribute. And Kyle Lowry came out of the gate swinging. So that was obviously really good to see. He played with a lot of energy last night. He had several big threes. You know, that kind of Kyle Lowry, when he shows up and DeRozan, as we know, is doing his thing, that makes the Raptors even better than they have been. Because recently, it's been the collective unit and DeRozan. And when you have DeRozan and Lowry leading the show, like, I mean, specifically with those, you know, supporting casts, that's when the Raptors are at their best.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, I can't even remember the last time Lowry put up 30 points. Obviously, it probably wasn't that long ago, but like you said, he hasn't been as aggressive this season. And shooting-wise, 10 of 14 from the field, 7 of 9 from 3, you know, 6 assists, really had his impact. And DeRozan did his thing with 23, and then they just got some nice minutes from Valanciunas as well. 14 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists. He also did a nice job on defense of protecting the rim. He blocked a couple Capella lobs a few times, so I was impressed by just the overall team effort in Toronto, too.
He went very big, too, Valanciunas, near the end of the game.
Yeah.
He had a couple big rebounds over Capella that helped close that out for the Raptors.
He muscles Capella a lot of times in that game. You know, definitely made his impact felt. And Valanciunas is a guy that, you know, there was talk about Toronto needing to trade him last year. I know I even mentioned it, and possibly in the offseason, and it's really looked like he's bounced back. And his impact was felt. He didn't play, you know, giant minutes, but it's still enough to really impact the game and kind of mess with Houston. And what the Rockets really did, and this is an SB Nation article, and you can kind of see it watching the game, you know, the Rockets offense just didn't look the same, and that's because the bigs were sitting back so much. They're forcing James Harden and Chris Paul into that mid-range game or kind of forcing some attack. And early on, Harden didn't really attack as much. He was still trying to throw the lobs. Second half, he attacked a little bit more. Also, they just stuck to the three-point shooters. You know, every once in a while, they, you know, lean off a Tucker or they kind of make Capella or Tucker make a play. But they really stuck to those guys, and you could see it because the Rockets only shot 9 at 27 from 3 last night. They didn't even attempt 33s, which is below their season average.
Yeah, it's wild. And Chris Paul wasn't really effective last night. a lot of the time watching Chris Paul, it looked like he was trying to do too much almost. didn't feel like he made any threes. And the one thing that stuck out to me specifically about Chris Paul was near the end of the game, obviously James Harden shot, I believe, 68% for the game. He has 40, and he was cooking in that fourth quarter for the most part. And they got one of the rebounds, and Chris Paul pushes up the floor, and they end up having, you know, the ball lost, and him and PJ Tucker are rolling on the ground with DeRozan and somebody else.
Oh, yes.
To get the ball. But James Harden was just walking up the floor. You know what I'm saying? Like, in that kind of situation where the game was, I believe, by one point at that point in time, I don't know why Chris Paul rushed it, didn't try and get James Harden involved, who was obviously in that Harden cooking mode.
Yeah, that's an interesting take as well, because you're right. I think at that point, you know, they were down. There was, I want to say, like 5 to 8 seconds on the clock, so he needed to rush a little bit, but I'm unsure the Rockets had a timeout, but I feel like they did. So maybe even call a timeout, drop a play for Harden or get him the ball. But like you said, it kind of just ended up being a scuffle and really didn't get what the Rockets needed in that situation. It was a lot of the clutch plays that, you know, Toronto did make. And you mentioned Chris Paul. Not only that play, there was a play where Fred VanVleet picked him up full court. He ended up turning the ball over. There was just a couple late game turnovers. He wasn't on his A game, and he mentioned that after the game as well.
Oh, there you go. I didn't realize he had comments after the game like that. But, yeah, he just didn't look good. He had a couple, too, of where, like, he just pushed the tempo too much and tried to do, like, he drove on Valanciunas, and he lost the ball, like, trying to go up for it, and it just rolled out of bounds.
Yeah. He kind of felt like he was getting frustrated from the start. He had that tech as well. And I just feel like, you know, Toronto did a good job of getting in his head. He did have some nice impact on the defensive end, but still. And missing for both teams in this game, OG Anunoby and Ryan Anderson for Houston. So both were pretty key pieces, not, you know, the superstars or anything like that, but definitely role players that have their impact.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Anderson, obviously, they average over 33 shot a game. And Ryan Anderson is one of those guys who's going to add at least 4 to 5 three-point attempts a game. So it definitely affects Houston's offense with a three-point shot when they don't have a guy like Ryan Anderson in. And then OG and Anunoby for the Rockets, they're lucky that he wasn't there, because he's been fantastic as a rookie, as a wing defender. He may not be much offensively, but defensively he has been a stud for them. He's been a younger version of Trevor Ariza in comparison on the defense. He uses his length very well.
And referenced in the SB Nation article I talked about before, Ryan Anderson's absence was kind of felt in the sense that I kept mentioning how the bigs were dropping back on the pick and roll. Well, Anderson would have given them a pick and pop option to sit at the 3-point line, a real catch and shoot. Obviously, PJ Tucker's not that guy. Trevor Ariza can shoot the three, but he's not as much a catch and shoot as Ryan Anderson, like you mentioned, who will pretty much launch it from anywhere behind the line. So that impact was felt. OG Anunoby, obviously, like you said, Corey, great defender. And one reason I think Toronto had so much success is they didn't switch a lot with their bigs last night, but they switched with a lot of their perimeter guys, and they had confidence in everybody on the perimeter that they could at least, you know, do somewhat of a good job to stop Harden. How much more confident are you about the Raptors moving forward after a big win against Houston like that?
I said it last night, and I'll say it on here now so it's on the record. I am done sleeping on the Raptors. I could definitely see this team coming out of the East. Cleveland, they are not – like, Cleveland is not good. They're not – they have not taken that turn as I or maybe even you expected once they made all the trades at the deadline. The team is not what I envisioned at all. So this is a two-man race between the Celtics and the Raptors. And in the playoffs, you need defense, which the Raptors have. You need an offense. I think the Raptors' offense is better than the Celtics. So I think they're just a more complete team. And I wouldn't be surprised if this team ends up playing in June. They look really good as a team. This is the best I've seen the Raptors look probably in 3 years. But I need to see it in the playoffs. Before I stamp it home, I need to see them in the playoffs, because I think almost every year for the last 3 years, I've said the Raptors are like the biggest threat to the Cavaliers, and they let me down.
Yeah,
so I just need to see Lowry not play like complete garbage in the playoffs for one time. Just one time. Just don't shoot under 40% for a series. Let me see what you're rocking with.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Lowry is probably the key player in this. DeRozan, to an extent, too. He hasn't been amazing in the postseason. His shooting percentages have dropped. But I think Lowry is, you know, the guy that really matters. Like you mentioned and I've mentioned on previous pods, him going to the postseason healthy is a big deal. Also, the minutes that he's getting this year, you know, resting a lot more, getting games off here and there. I think it'll really pay off in the playoffs.
And for DeRozan, his struggles in the playoffs can be pretty much correlated in the past to the fact that you don't get to the line as much in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But this year, I mean, he was hitting threes again last night. You know, DeRozan's game really impacts
the game a lot. That three-point shot, the ability for DeRozan, and just he's a really tough defender. I don't think people really give him the credit he deserves in terms of his overall game. Now, obviously, the three-point ball needs to be more consistent over more than one season, but he also improved as a playmaker this year too. So I'm excited to see what the Raptors can do. And like you said, you know, there's a really good chance they can end up in the finals. Same thing could be said about Houston. I think a lot of people are actually starting to give them the respect they deserve. They're just not, you know, a really good team. They're a really good team that could probably push the Warriors 6 or 7 games. And I feel like when you watch Houston a little bit, they went down, you know, 20 in this game. They were down 15. And it kind of feels like the Warriors in the sense, you know, that they're always going to come back at some point and kind of make it close.
Yeah, the one thing I can say about the Rockets, which I don't like, since they got Joe Johnson, they stopped using Gerald Green. And I'm not a fan of it. Gerald Green was really good in that stretch when Harden went down. And now he doesn't even touch the floor, really. And I know Joe Johnson was solid last night in his 18 minutes. You know, he had 5 points on 2 of 3 shooting. But, I mean, I don't know. I like when Houston goes out and runs. And Joe Johnson kind of stops the let's get out and run. I don't know.
I think
they're still working in, you know, the couple of pieces they got back. Obviously, Abalamute just got back too recently, so they're trying to fit him back in. But I didn't like the rotations last night for the Rockets.
Yeah, and then also you got to remember Ryan Anderson coming back. You know, where is he going to fit in the rotations? Definitely are going to change a little bit. So they want to find their rhythm. You know, they were on a long winning streak, so it ended, and now they're going to look to start another one. But you mentioned Cleveland and the struggles they have. Report came out this week, Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, that LeBron really has 4 teams on his list this summer, Cleveland, Houston, Philly, and L.A. being the Lakers. So what were your thoughts when you heard this report?
Is it true? That was actually my first thought was, is this true? Can I trust this information? We know how LeBron is with his camp and how the information that gets let out. It feels like every single message that gets out from LeBron is planned. You know what I'm saying? It's got an agenda behind it. So I'm not sure if what the leverage would be for him in this situation.
And LeBron came out and said there is no list. Obviously, LeBron's going to say that, but he did come out and say that as well, just to put that out there.
Of course, he has to. Yeah. Because what would any Cavalier think right now playing with LeBron if he's already thinking about possible other teams to go to? But we know he is.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, it's just human nature. I don't think anybody in their head ever could be like, you know, unless you're really dialed in, like maybe somebody like Russell Westbrook last year in the MVP race looking for the triple-doubles, trying to get OKC in the playoffs. Like, he's not thinking about it, and he's not a free agent. But I think, you know, most NBA players, when they're a free agent, they have to think about it, especially after good games, bad games. LeBron's situation is obviously different because he's the best player in the league. You know, when you're another guy, you're like, oh, maybe I could sign with another team, get a bigger role, get more money. LeBron can get and go to any team he wants, get whatever money he wants. You know what I mean? It's going to happen. It's more so like, what is LeBron planning? What's the agenda? So if you had to give a percentage on the teams that LeBron could go to, you know, including Cleveland, Houston, Philly, LA, and you can throw in a random team if you want. Can you give me percentages for each squad?
Oh yeah, for sure. So for the Cavaliers, I'll say 50%. They get the majority because it's home. There's a lot of factors that play into Cleveland. So it's always going to be the top destination for me until he leaves because it's got everything there for him. And, you know, he'll always be the king. You know what I'm saying? Cleveland, he'll never have to worry about anyone not loving him because it is his city. So 50% for Cleveland. The next highest, I'll say 20% to the Sixers. The more and more these rumors come out about the Sixers, the more I can kind of see it happening. Embiid obviously posted about him. He posted about Ben Simmons. You know, there's a lot of mutual love between those three, which could lead to a possible, him signing there. I mean, if you like the guys who are already there on the team, it's more of a chance you sign there. I mean, he went to Miami, which was his best friend's team. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. LeBron generally goes to places where I think he would feel comfortable.
Chemistry is important. Yeah. And, exactly. You know, LeBron's going to be getting into the later stages of his career. Obviously, he is some type of cyborg, but we can expect at least a slight drop off. Like, there's no way that he's not going to, you know, regress in some way or another. So having, you know, superstars in a situation he feels comfortable in, I think it's going to be huge.
Right. So then you got 20% for the Sixers. And then I'll say 20% I'll say 15% for the Rockets. I think Chris Paul and James Harden will make a pitch to LeBron. I'm sure D'Antoni will say how I can make you last even longer in this league, because I had Steve Nash, who played very little defense, and he was fantastic his entire time underneath me. but I have issues with him going to Houston, only because I know this is like the issue I always have with super teams. But there's only one basketball, and Chris Paul, James Harden, and LeBron James all operate with the ball in their hands. Not necessarily as a scorer, but as facilitators as well, which is something that like the Warriors didn't have to deal with, because Kevin Durant was a scorer with the ball in his hands. It's not the same trying to get a scorer the ball in his hands less as for these guys who need the ball in their hands to score and facilitate. So I just think that would be a weird dynamic, and I'm not sold that it could happen and work. So what I got left? I got the 85, I got 15% left. So I'll say the Spurs are at 10%, because I think Popovich and him have mutual love. Popovich could maybe sway him into San Antonio. Then I'll give the Lakers 5%, because that's not happening.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I'm pretty similar. I think the Cavs I have at 60%, just because I think it's the most likely situation. Like you said, it's home. You know, you can kind of push the front office to make moves, and maybe they're able to do something. I'm not sure. Because, and also, there's just not a ton of options out there. You know, it's just not great for LeBron to leave this team and play on three different teams for his legacy. You know, not many super, you know, all-time greats have done that, if any. So I think that has an impact on LeBron. Next, I'll have a random team. I don't know what team this is. There's always a dark horse team with every free agent situation. It's just always what there is. This dark horse team's at 15%. And Philly, I am going to put at 14%. Just because, like you mentioned, the Ben Simmons Embiid thing, and the fact that he could kind of groove into the finals each year having them. And Joel Embiid kind of presents a difficult situation for the Warriors. Even Ben Simmons, to an extent, just that size and length, where the Warriors don't necessarily have the matchup for Embiid. So who knows? Maybe LeBron's thinking about that. 10% for Houston, just because, like you said, you know, Chris Paul, James Harden, they're the guys. But similar to LeBron, all those guys like to score and facilitate and need the ball in some extent. Maybe D'Antoni could scheme up something, but it's still really tough to convince all those guys. And then the Lakers at 1%.
The 1% is justice.
I mean, I'm not even trying. Like, Laker fans will probably hate me for it, but I just – LeBron, like, LeBron is 34. Like, the Lakers, I think we all – you know, they've played great. But if LeBron didn't hop on the Lakers next year, and even if they maybe added Paul George, we wouldn't even lock them in for the playoffs. You know, they've played great, but they haven't been this consistent all season. They're a young team, and there's a lot of different variables in the West with a lot of teams being banged up. So I don't know if LeBron's going West, he needs to go to the best or the second best team in the West, and that would be Houston, not the Lakers, because you have to beat Golden State. So what's LeBron want to go to the Lakers just to not make the finals? You know, it doesn't really make sense.
And like Lonzo Ball obviously has been very good since coming back from injury. Last night he went 1-for-8 from three. So we saw the return of Lonzo Ball. Sorry, I had to be a dick real quick.
I'll throw in a quick stat, and I'm not trying to throw shade at Lonzo, but when he had that, you know, great shooting stretch, a lot of those threes were wide open, not even slightly contested. It was like 5 to 8 feet, no defender. So I think maybe people will probably adapt a little bit and actually contest the shot, and that's where he really needs to step up.
Right. And I'm just looking at the Lakers team right now on paper. You know, why would LeBron, even if you don't re-sign Caldwell Pope, and you don't re-sign Isaiah Thomas, because there's no way LeBron wants to play with Isaiah Thomas. This Taras and Brook Lopez would probably be gone. I mean, Lonzo Ball, Julius Randle, and Kyle Kuzma, Zubac, Tyler Ennis, Luol Deng. Like, these are the guys that you think LeBron would be like, yeah, this is a good core that I want to stay with. Like, I don't understand what happens in Lakerland, where these guys always think a superstar is going to head to their team when they just need to develop these young players. And Brandon Ingram, of course, too. I forgot about him. But there's too many young guys. Like, it does, like you said, it makes no sense. They would, even if they got LeBron and Paul George, this team would have to fight for a 7 or 6 seed. Like, they're not going to win that many games just because they get LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, I think they would probably be a higher seed than that. But I think in the fact is, like you said, you know, having these guys, if LeBron was, like, young, like mid-20s, and it kind of made sense, like, all right, let me hop on with all these young dudes. We'll all develop together, and we're about to have a dynasty in L.A. But, like, I just don't see it happening right now with the Laker team they have, like you said, and just doesn't really match up. It would take a lot of work. It's not impossible. That's why they're still 1% on the board for me, but it's really unlikely. But LeBron also mentioned he said there was no list. He said DeAndre Jordan trade would have helped give the Cavs a boost. What do you make of this comment? Does it mean anything, or just another quote from LeBron?
It means little. Obviously, DeAndre Jordan, when he is in the right system, when he has a point guard that, you know, utilizes him to his dunking abilities,
LeBron playmaker.
Right, you get games like last night where DeAndre had 20 and 23.
It's huge.
And he had what, one block? Yeah, one block. You know, that DeAndre Jordan we saw very often with Chris Paul. That DeAndre Jordan was a complete monster. It's what got him to get that decently big contract that, you know, Mark Cuban was really hoping to be able to pay him. But he stayed, obviously, in LAC. And LeBron's right. You know, you get a guy like that who gets 20 and 20. It's a game changer. They don't have a rebounder like that on this Cavaliers roster. You know, Larry Nance obviously had that big game the other night, but Larry Nance is not a consistent, you know, double-digit rebounder. He's just not. His size is for that reason, going to be a slight issue. And LeBron's got to be a huge rebounder as well because they don't have a rim protector. DeAndre just would have opened up, I think, things on offense and defense. And DeAndre can run the floor. You know, I saw a lot of people say that DeAndre wouldn't be able to get up and down the floor playing with a fast-paced Cavs team, which was the stupidest take I've ever seen, because DeAndre Jordan is made for those kind of teams. That's literally the purpose of a guy like DeAndre, is for him to run with the team and just pretty much catch oops and get rebounds.
And just a reminder, you know, when you're running the floor, you don't have to be the first person down for the fast break. A trailing big is really easy to throw a dunk to, especially when you have somebody like LeBron. And I think, you know, especially with this team, the fit of the fact that the rebounding, you know, Tristan Thompson's not what he's supposed to be. Kevin Love's obviously out, and the lack of rim protection, DeAndre fills the need instantly. And it's kind of like maybe LeBron hinting like, oh, yeah, it would have been nice if they traded the Nets pick for DeAndre, because that probably would have had been on the table. But whatever. It, like you said, I don't think it's like a game changer at any point. But do you think LeBron's worried about not coming out of the East this season? You know, he mentioned where, you know, people were like, you know, he created the cigarette meme in real life when he was like, doesn't matter, I'm a 3rd, 4th, 5th, 8th seed. You know, if I come into your building for game one, it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he cares a huge amount at this point of his career. And I think he said it after all these trades happened, if you recall. He said, you know, this, we're not going to start. He goes, I know we won 2 big games coming into the All-Star break, but that doesn't mean that we have things figured out or that we're going to go on a run. He goes, we're going to lose. He goes, we're going to lose some games. He goes, hopefully, though, we can get it right in time for playoffs and we can make a run. I think he's – this year in particular, and he also said, you know, getting to the finals, he goes, getting to the finals would be a victory. He goes, I don't even – you know, that'd be – he goes, 2 months ago you said finals, I'd been say no. So I think LeBron understands that this team is not that good this year. Obviously, he always has title aspirations, and that goes without saying. But I think he understands that this team that he's on is not very good, and it is an issue.
Yeah.
And I think he's just come to terms with that.
It reminds me of some of the comments he had his first year in Cleveland coming back, where he's like, you know, if we make the finals, that'd be great, but I don't really expect it. And I also could see LeBron, you know, somewhat, like you said, he always has an agenda when he says something, and it wouldn't be bad for his legacy if for somehow he was a 5th seed and they ended up in the finals. Like, that's a pretty nice accomplishment to throw on your resume. You know, it's like, oh, this team wasn't that good. We only landed a 5th seed, and then all of a sudden we went through the Eastern Conference playoffs on the road, and we ended up in the championship. Maybe we lose, but it's still a nice thing to kind of make the season look better than what it was.
Yeah, it definitely – it would fit in. And let's say, you know – not that I think they're going to win. I don't think you do either. But let's say they win, you know, the first round they play the Pacers in like a 4-5 matchup, right? And they beat the Pacers in 6 or 7 games. Then they have to play the Celtics, whoever, and they beat them in, you know, six games, and then they beat the Raptors in seven games, and then they get to the finals, and maybe they only win one game. Like, remember the Sixers team that lost to the Lakers without Allen Iverson? They won game one. Like, that felt like a title game for them. Like, they acted like they won it all from that one game in overtime. I could totally see, like, the Cavs winning one game and being like, holy shit, like, maybe the Cavs can do this, and then just getting blown out the next four.
See, I could see that. I also could see the fact of them getting to the finals and them even losing in five, but playing better games than what we saw last year in terms of competitiveness and the close, you know, the scores being a lot closer. Like, even though the games weren't that crazy last year, the vibe was just like, you know, the Warriors are going to win every game. It hasn't been that close. And, you know, it was closer than it seemed. But if, you know, this Cavs team can really compete and even, like you said, win one game, it might help them in terms of getting LeBron back in the summer. Especially if he starts to like the little guy, you know, the little guys, the young guys, and, you know, really starts to buy into them and can see the growth in their game and the potential they have. Because, I mean, you know, like LeBron said, they're not going to all groove in together. There's a lot of new pieces, a lot of young talent that's never even really played on a winning team. Like we mentioned, Jordan Clarkson, Nance, like Rodney Hood's been on Utah. He's been banged up a lot. And they haven't had like deep playoff runs. So, you know, that type of experience, you kind of see somebody's true colors in the playoffs like that, especially in like a game seven when everything's on the line.
The injuries too, Nick, last night that they suffered will be something to look out for too, with how they can go forward. Because obviously Rodney Hood and Chetty Osman are going to miss some time now, and that's going to be a question for the Cavs, who are already struggling. Now they got to figure out another rotation with new guys out, and then how long are these guys going to be out for? Obviously Hood, it's a strained back, and Chetty Osman, I think it's a strained hip or a calf or something. It's a hip injury.
Both,
so it's
going
to be interesting to see how they are.
They tend to linger too, because, you know, anything with your back, I think Rodney Hood's had back issues in Utah, if I'm not mistaken. Then also a strained hip is like any type of hip injury is super weird. And also doesn't help the Cavs. You know, it's not like these guys are locked down defensive player of the year types, but Rodney Hood's a pretty good defender, and Seti Osman puts a lot of energy into playing D. So they could definitely not help him. But talking playoffs, let's look at the Western Conference. And the Western Conference playoffs is kind of ridiculous. You know, you look at 1 and 2, whatever, it's Houston and Golden State. Houston has a half a game lead. But then you look at the 3 seed to the 10th seed, and they're only separated by 4 games. So Portland is in number 3, and Utah is in number 10. And they're tied. Utah is currently tied with number 9, Denver, and number 8, LA Clippers. So all over the place, you know, you have a 3-game losing streak in the West, you're out of the playoff picture. Like, it's that close. What team, I would say, is the most surprising to see in the playoff race in terms of being so high or so low?
The Portland Trailblazers, for sure. They've been probably the nice little story, especially the second half. Obviously, last night with their win over the Warriors, Damian Lillard saying, we're here. So it's they've been, to me, the biggest surprise. And like we mentioned in the last show, the Pelicans have been a big surprise too, mainly because they lost Cousins and then went on a giant run without him. Yeah. Yes, it was against some weaker teams. I think 6 of their 10 wins were against teams under 500. But even still, you know, they still beat the Spurs in that stretch and a couple other solid wins. So those two teams in particular, to me, are the surprises.
Yeah, like you said, we mentioned them on the last show. Both of them have guys that are really stepping up. Obviously, Pelicans have Anthony Davis and Portland has Dame Lillard. And I agree, you know, Portland is really surprising, because we mentioned on the preview pod, and like we mentioned in the last episode, they didn't do a ton in the offseason. There was just a lot of development of some of the younger guys. It's like Napier, Connaughton really stepping up. You know, even their first-round pick this year, Zach Collins, has had some decent minutes as well. So I think Portland's definitely been a team that's surprised, because you didn't expect them to get there. Obviously, a lot of these teams up here have benefited from some of the injuries of, you know, Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, you know, and even an Andre Roberson has really hurt OKC. So what team on the other end of the spectrum has surprised you in the sense like, wow, I did not expect them to be this low in, you know, the playoff seeding this late in the season?
I guess it would be OKC, but I mean, it's just, they're still 38-29, right? It's, you know, if they were in the East, they would be a 3 seed right now. So it's just all about, you know, who you're around, and they're just around a really tough conference. I mean, Pelicans 38 wins, Spurs 37, Timberwolves 38, OKC 38, Clippers 35, Denver 36, Utah 30. I mean, this the Western Conference is always a 10-team race, it feels like. Especially, like, if you look back, you know, I remember when the Jazz missed the playoffs, like, 2 years ago in Kobe's final game where he scored 60. You know, they missed out on the playoffs, but they still had, I think, you know, 39 or 40 wins. So, the more than that, because I think they were actually above 500. But, you know, this conference is – it's a shit show. It really is a shit show. These conference champions will change every night. And that's something I love about the NBA is the fact that we can check these standings every morning, Nick, and they will be different every morning. And that is something that you just don't find in a ton of other leagues. Obviously, every playoff, like end of the season stretch is tight. But, you know, OKC can win tonight and can be a four seed. And then they're no longer a team that I'm worried about. You know what I'm saying? It's crazy how much the standings are, you know, tight-knit at this point in the year. Because I think every night from here on out, we're going to see a different person sitting at the four seed or a five seed.
Well, it kind of goes to the point of, you know, Portland and New Orleans. You know, they both went on long winning streaks. They went from being in the bottom of the playoff picture to almost the top and looking at home court. So a five-game winning streak or a three-game losing streak could really, you know, push you from the top of the bottom of the standings or even knock you out. Because like you said, right now, you know, Denver 36-30, six games over 500. Utah 36-30, six games over 500. Both teams have a decent chance at missing the playoffs. You know, they'll probably each get 40-plus wins, and they're going to miss out on the playoffs. So, and like you said, it's a ton of fun, and the East is a lot of fun as well. You know, other than 1 and 2, it's pretty close as well from 3 to 8. You know, they don't have the two guys trying to squeeze in at the end, and you don't have the chance of missing out on the playoffs. But seeding is definitely up for grabs in the East as well.
The only difference between the East and the West is the West teams, like the bottom teams, they're all getting hot. For example, Utah's won 5 in a row. So if you're in the playoff picture, you're worried about Utah because they're getting better and better as the season progresses. They're finally healthy. I think Jay Crowder has been a great addition for them. They're not missing Rodney Hood. And then with Denver, at times they look like they're finding it. And I think Gary Harris has been kind of overrated this year. Will Barton's been slightly underrated this year, not overrated. They've both been underrated. They both have been playing great basketball. I think they're also a team that's just going to keep rising. Like
Millsap coming back now is going to be big. You know, he's not fully 100%, but he's back in the lineup and getting a play. Like, people have been sleeping on Paul Millsap for like 3 years now. So getting a guy like that should definitely help them.
Yeah, and I actually believe that Minnesota will miss out on the playoffs.
Oh,
after watching them,
interesting.
After watching them a few times without Jimmy Butler, I'm just not impressed. Karl Anthony Towns, he does his thing. He's been phenomenal pretty much all year. Andrew Wiggins, I was really big on him. You know, I like Wiggins a lot. Mm-hmm. He's letting me down. I just don't see enough from him. He doesn't give you much defense, and I'm really tired of pull up jumpers on almost every possession from him. It's getting really old.
Yeah, Wiggins,
and then Derrick Rose, and then you get Rose.
Oh God, so. We didn't even bring that up. What does that do for the Timberwolves? Before we talk shit about Andrew Wiggins, let's I guess talk some shit about Derrick Rose. What does bringing Derrick Rose on the Timberwolves do for them? Like, how does it make them better in any way?
You already have Tyus Jones. Like, your guard position was not your issue. Jeff Teague has been okay. Obviously, he's not phenomenal anymore. But you needed someone who can shoot threes. Like, they needed somebody on the wing who could shoot threes and defend. And they get a guy who can drive and not defend. And I like, you know, of course the team has to give out like the correct statements. So they're all like, oh, we're really excited to get Rose and what he can bring to the team. Like, Rose just gets that form. And like, I'm so tired of reading headlines that say, Timberwolves sign former MVP Derrick Rose. All right. Can we stop acting like he was an MVP last year? Like, he was an MVP 9 years ago and hasn't played close to that level since. It was 7 years ago, but still, you get my point. This guy is not anything that he used to be. And I also saw someone say on Twitter the other night, well, he almost averaged 8 points per game with the Knicks last year. I don't give a damn what he averaged with the Knicks. The Knicks were crap. Like, come on. I don't understand it at all. I hope the best for him. Like, I don't wish he does bad. But, you know, it's just the fact that this is where he is in his career. He's not going to do good.
Yeah. And then you got the people on Twitter, the Derrick Rose stands that are like, he's better than these 15 point guards in the NBA. And it's like, bro, he's not even a starting point guard in the NBA. Please, 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 please. And like you said, you know, it's not like we wish Derrick Rose bad or anything, but numbers don't really lie. And it's just his game right now. He tries to play too much with, I need to prove something, instead of, you know, trying to fit into a role. I brought this up with Jahlil Okafor on the Brooklyn Buzz podcast. He wants to be that franchise cornerstone. He wants to be that guy who's getting the ball, getting the touches, a lot of post touches, scoring a lot. You know, everybody has in the spotlight. But the thing is, Okafor isn't that guy. He needs to just work his way into the NBA, and maybe he can work to that level. He needs to do the small things about being a big, you know, playing high energy, playing good defense, rebounding the ball. Same thing for Derrick Rose. He needs to come in and just be a guard off the bench and try to work his way up. You know, play with high energy, play with some defense, pass the ball to your teammates. Don't try to score every single time you touch it. Like, I think if Rose works on his game that way and tries to be a great role player instead of trying to be MVP Rose, things would be a lot better for him.
No, I agree. There's this weird, it happens among a lot of guys, I think. You know, when you have such high expectations or you play at such a high level, it's Darren hard Williams. To break yourself. Darren Williams. It's hard to break yourself out of that. You know, I have to keep trying to play at this level, or I have to be this guy in order to be successful. When that's not the case, you know, we've seen, like, for example, Evan Turner, great example. He was, what, number one overall or number two? I mean, he was the top pick in one of the drafts.
Top 4 pick, top 3 pick.
Right. And he's never played like a top 3 pick. Maybe his first year in Philadelphia, the first couple of years of Philadelphia, did he? But he never did. He adjusted his game to being a, you know, a really scrappy, you know, fourth or fifth option on an offense and doing the little things. And I would say he's had a great career for everything he's done and all the different places he's been. He's found a great situation in Portland, and he's a big reason why they're winning right now. But again, you know, you have to just, like, change your mindset, I think, and that's a hard thing. I'm a guy like Okafor. For example, Nick, like, I'm sure you see it, like, that guy had such high expectations coming off the draft, out of the draft. And then in Philly, he wasn't used. He was pretty much told that he sucked.
And the worst part is that he started off so well in Philly his rookie year, where he put up the numbers. So in his head, he's probably like, you know, I can do this in the NBA, even though in theory that Philly team wasn't very good and they weren't winning games. So those numbers were just inflated.
Right. And it's the same thing with Michael Carter Williams Jr., if you recall.
Yeah,
like,
yep.
That. His first year in Philly, he kind of had those crazy numbers, and everyone was like, "Oh wow, he had a quadruple double! Like, this kid could be the next, you know, LeBron or Magic." And obviously now he's out with a torn labrum and after the season, but he's never been close to that level. Like you said, it's inflated numbers.
A great example of somebody who taking their career from being a, you know, borderline superstar player, you know, probably an all time great, and then working into a bench role and having a positive impact is somebody like Vince Carter. You know, Vince
Carter,
yeah,
Zach Randolph, both those guys in Sacramento, they both had those big starting roles, and now they're back. Well, Zach Randolph still starts, but they've adjusted to.
Well, even career. Vince, to the extent when he went from playing in Toronto and New Jersey of being, you know, that 25 plus point game of scorer, going Orlando, calming down, it didn't really work out. Then he goes to Dallas, he really finds a groove, you know, being a role player there and helps them win games in the playoffs. You know, it's everybody has to adapt, and it doesn't always work for some guys. For example, Kobe, like, you know, I know he's one of your favorite players, but at the end of his career, obviously he was taking too many shots, getting too many touches. The Lakers weren't good, so it didn't really matter. But, you know, it's hard to kind of just turn it off of being great. So it's not like we hate Derrick Rose for being that way. It's just sometimes it's like you got to try to help them adapt.
Right. And Kobe's fall off too, I have to defend Kobe. His fall off too was like 2 years, right?
Yeah.
And it was just like a quick fall off, because if you remember – before he got hurt in 2000, when he ruptured his Achilles, he was still playing really good that year. He was phenomenal, and he was 34. And then obviously his last 2 years, he was not good. But you know, Derrick Rose had a quick fall off, and you know, it went from him scoring over 20 to then scoring under 20 for 2 years, and then now being, you know, a shell of himself.
Injuries will do that to you. Like you mentioned, yeah. Kobe with the Achilles, like, that's a terrible injury to have that late in your career. And Derrick Rose, he just had numerous knee injuries. And you obviously, like, the thing that always confused me about Derrick Rose, and you see it occasionally with players, but never to the extent Derrick Rose, where it felt like, it seemed, you know, the Bulls never said this, but it seemed like he was 100% ready to go but he didn't feel confident in the knee and he didn't feel comfortable. And it seemed like it took him a really long time to adjust and feel comfortable with his knee. And it still feels like he never got back to that level fully. You don't trust your body, you're never going to be able to perform. And it just sucks for him to lose his career like that.
Yeah. I mean, I still remember a couple of years ago, it was 2 years, LeBron's first year in Cleveland, right? Maybe it was the second, where Rose hit that game winner at the buzzer over Cleveland.
Yep. That was in the playoffs.
Like game three. Yeah, it was in game three or four.
And he had a really good reaction after the game. He like didn't smile and his teammates picked him up.
He was stone faced. That was like a meme for a solid meme for like 2 weeks. But yeah, actually, you know something? That's Derrick Rose's face signing with Tom Thibodeau right there. That face and that gif is his reaction. But you know, he wasn't that bad, you know, 2 to 3 years ago. The fall off happened, you know, the last year in Chicago to then the Knicks and now. It was a 3 year fall off because that was 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's tough. And, you know, injuries get worse, or like we mentioned, you know, your ego thing and then just systems fits. Obviously, I'm always big on guards being able to shoot threes, and the fact that he can't consistently knock down a three ball obviously is hurting his game because he's not the athletic attacker he used to be. But talking about bad teams and bad situations, let's talk about the tankathon going on right now. You know, obviously there is a lot of teams that are looking to get that number one pick, especially with the draft changing in the future years. So you have teams like Memphis, Phoenix, Dallas, Atlanta, Orlando, Chicago, New York. I'm not going to include Brooklyn because they're not actually tanking because they don't have their pick. But these other teams, they're, you know, the purpose for them to lose. In your eyes, who has been the biggest tanker right now?
The biggest tanker has to be Memphis.
Yes. No, it's not even close either.
I mean, they've lost 16 in a row.
I don't know how.
I honestly can't say I was aware it had reached over 10 games. I'm actually just finding out when you gave out these topics that they've lost 16 in a row. Like, I swear to God, like, last week, I had no idea they lost 16 in a row. Or fifth, or whatever it was when we did the last pod. So, that was probably like 13. I had no idea, Nick. And then you put up Tankathon, so I was like, all right, let me do some research. And I'm looking, I'm like, yeah, all these teams are on the same, like, wins and losses. And you go over to, like, their streak, and I was like, oh, 16. Oh, they're over their last 10. 5 for 26 on the road. So the Memphis Grizzlies are the complete Tankathon winners currently.
It's crazy. It's crazy that, and they also didn't trade anybody at the deadline. They could have traded Tyreek Evans. Obviously, I guess it was offers they didn't really like. And then same thing with Marc Gasol, and they just gave Mike Conley that huge deal. Like, what are your thoughts on Memphis right now? Like, in that whole organization, in that whole situation, in terms of what they have and what they have moving forward?
Why didn't they trade Tyreek Evans and Marc Gasol? That's, to me, that's literally – we talked about it on our trade deadline special. I don't understand why they made no moves. I don't understand. It really baffles me. Is Tyreek Evans even playing?
He's played. I think he's been banged up a little bit. You know, they brought him back playing after they realized they weren't going to trade him.
I know he got hurt the same night Jimmy Butler did with like a rib injury. But still, I just don't understand why they kept him. And Marc Gasol, they might have really regretted not trading him because his fall off so far looks really bad this year. He has not been good. He's shooting 41% from the field, 32% from three. I know he's still averaging 17 points per game. But like we said before, to Okafor, when you're on a bad team, numbers get inflated a little bit. So he's averaging 17, 8, and 4. But he's shooting 41 and 32. That's not good. Like, those numbers aren't good if that's your efficiency shooting the ball. I think they messed up.
I believe the last time the Memphis Grizzlies have won was in the month of January against the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
God bless the Grizzly fans, because there's nothing worse than long losing streaks. You know, coming from a Nets fan, I've endured plenty of those, and it is tough. Like, I don't even know. It gets to the point where you can't watch the score. You just have to watch the players in the court and, you know, try to pick out nice things that are happening because you don't want to see the scoreboard because it's never in your favor.
Where's Muhammad at? He's still loving. I see. Can the Grizzlies beat the Warriors in a 7-game series? Muhammad, where are you? Let me know.
Yeah. Out of, you know, obviously the Grizzlies, they don't have a great situation. Out of the tanking teams, which team do you feel the most confident in moving forward? And, like, you know, they're going to have a nice young future. You know, they got pieces already. They're going to get another pick. I feel confident in them.
Chicago. I think of the tanking teams, Chicago and I mean, I'm actually not totally disappointed in Phoenix. I think they've made a couple nice moves, but you know, there's still a lot of work to go for Phoenix. They need I mean, obviously if they had ever gotten a guy like Blake Griffin or DeAndre or LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, this team's really been looking for a big, and I think a big could really turn things around for Phoenix. But I really do like what the Chicago Bulls have right now.
Yeah. I think out of the tanking teams, you look at Atlanta, they don't really have the young pieces all there yet. Orlando, we kind of are just super confused. Brooklyn, I said, I'm not considering them tanking. Chicago, you got to like what they have. You know, I think you'd probably like what the Knicks have if Porzingis didn't get hurt. You know, coming off that torn ACL, it's going to be a little bit tougher than expected. He's not going to be back for a while. So the Knicks definitely have some time to add more young pieces. And then you mentioned Phoenix. I think Phoenix is flying under the radar. Josh Jackson really picked it up, I think, in the second half of the season. He's somebody moving forward. Obviously, Devin Booker's been putting up huge numbers, some of it being on a losing team. Sacramento's had some good flashes, but still you really don't know what's up in Sacramento. And Dallas and Memphis, I'm not really, like, high on their group of young players. Like, I don't know if they have either of them have, you know, many stars on the team or any.
Yeah, Dallas is, like, a weird collection of players right now.
A lot of old guys with a lot of young guys. It's, like, complete opposite ends.
Yeah, I mean, J.J. Barea plays a ton of minutes still. And I think they're kind of in, like, the Kobe situation, right? You know, Dirk is kind of holding that roster hostage in a way. Not that he's making a ton or that he's –
he doesn't play a ton, at least.
Right. But, I mean, he still plays, you know, 20 to 25 minutes a game. And he's – generally, those are not a good 20 to 25 minutes.
Yeah, I think that overall Dallas mentality, like you said, not only Dirk, but J.J. Barea, Wesley Matthews, like all these guys playing, it's not really helping you right now in terms of developing these guys. Obviously, you want some vets on the floor, but they have other young guys they want to play. So I was surprised maybe they weren't a little bit more active in trying to find younger pieces to build with, because just having the old guys on contract doesn't really help you if you're not going to make the playoffs in the next 5 years. Or I don't want to say next 5 years, so maybe next, you know, 2 or 3 years, because a lot can change in one offseason.
Right, but they do have – the one thing I will say is they do have two nice players that they can build around for the future, and that's Dennis Smith Jr., of course, and Harrison Barnes. Now, Harrison Barnes, he's not doing anything great this year. He's shooting 44 and 34 with 18, 6, and 1. But he is still young, relatively young. He can still be, you know, on that Warriors team when they were great, you know, he can win – you know, he can be a second or third option on a good team. He just can't be the guy. So I think he's solid. And that's the one thing Dallas lacks. There's no one on this team, I think, that is ever going to be, you know, the guy. I mean, Dennis Smith Jr. has potential to be. But I still think this team needs to have, you know, probably a big that, you know, leads the team as a superstar.
Yeah, they need some type of big-time big player. So maybe they got a high draft pick. Dwight Powell is okay, but he's not, you know, any star type of player. And like you said, Dennis Smith Jr. has a lot of potential, and you look at it. And Harrison Barnes is a guy. He's a guy that can be on your team in a championship situation like we saw in Golden State. So it's not like he's the piece that's hurting you, but you definitely need a lot more young pieces in there.
Yeah, Dennis Smith Jr. needs to work on his efficiency. That's my big
issue. A lot of young guys.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not trying to nitpick, but, you know, I never like seeing a guy shoot under 40% in shooting categories. It's obviously rookie numbers, so it is what it is. He's still trying to get used to the league. But those kind of things always concern me. And it was the same issue I had with Lonzo. I'm a big guy, as you are on space and floor spacing. I'm a big guy on efficiency. I like guys who, if they're going to shoot the ball a high quantity, they're going to do it quality. You know, don't just chuck up – like the Melo mentality. Melo would take, you know, 15 to 20 shots a game, and he's been making like 6 of them. I don't want that near me. That's not – that doesn't serve me any good.
Yeah, you're looking for somebody who's in that probably 44% and up field goal range. You know, that –
I'll give you 43. I'll give you 43 or 42 as long as you're doing other things. But you can't be under 40 by any means.
Yeah, I think that's an ugly number. Under 40 is definitely under. And the three-point line, I think now the number used to be more closer to 33%, but now you're looking for guys to shoot more.
35, 36 and up.
Yeah, more towards 40 than more towards 30. So it's looking like you said 35, 36, and like you want your good three-point shooters now at least shooting over 40%. So shooting is definitely, you know, efficiency is important. Guys just need to make their shots. But anything else on the tanking teams before we get out of here, Corey?
I mean – the Hawks still, I hate you. You're terrible.
John Collins has had a nice season.
Yeah, no, John Collins is solid. I had him in fantasy.
Taurean Prince was benched yesterday, which is interesting.
That is interesting. I like Taurean Prince. I'm not – it must have been something with him and Budenholzer, right? Budenholzer?
Yeah.
Budenholzer. I would expect that they must have had some kind of disagreement because he's been phenomenal for them at times. Like, he's had a couple over 30-point games. He's been solid for them.
Yeah, he's shown flashes. So he's been confusing. Inconsistencies, just like we mentioned, for all the young players, that's what you're seeing. Like me watching the Nets, I know every night, you know, one guy might have a good game and the other guy might have a bad game. Like D'Angelo Russell in my head, inconsistency. One night I see him play the Warriors, he looks great. Next night I see him against Charlotte, he doesn't look as good. So it's just about, you know, trying to maintain that consistency and becoming a great player.
Well, and that's the Hawks in general with the inconsistency. I mean, you got Ken Bazemore, who is the ultimate. You know, he can go one night for 27-7, and the next night he'll go for 8-2-1. You know, the Atlanta is just a dumpster fire.
Savage, Corey. But that wraps it up for today. Thank you for hopping on, Corey. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And as I mentioned before, you can always listen to the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and now we are airing on Dash Radio. So be sure to check us out on all of our platforms and let us know what you think on Twitter at OTGBasketball.
Peace.